This episode contains brief mentions of dubcon and non-con themes, vor, and clowns. If any of these topics are particularly triggering to you, please check out my Instagram at romantically_inclined for a graphic including the exact minutes and seconds in which these topics appear. Thank you.
All right. Welcome to episode 2 of the Romantically Inclined podcast, where we talk all things romance novels and some things not about romance novels. A reminder, this is recommended for 18 and over individuals. So if you are younger than 18, maybe don't listen. But I'm not your parents. I don't care. And today we are interviewing Vera Valentine, who is the author, co-author and author of many books, co-author of the Holiday Hedonism stories, which are, well, we'll get into it, but absolutely bonkers. And yeah, so I'm just going to let Vera introduce herself. I'm sure she has like some sort of spiel that she gives when she's talking about herself, and I want to hear what it is. So Vera.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I don't really have a prepared spiel. I use all of my word power on the page, but I have started introducing myself as the Wish brand Chuck Tingle, which seems to go over pretty well.
I like that. That is accurate. That is very accurate.
I started like a lot of authors did. I got Kindle Unlimited back in 2021 when we were all still locked in our houses, and I read 8 million novels and decided I wanted to write my own. So I've been writing since last September. And I'm mostly in the monster romance and reverse harem paranormal circles.
I can't believe you've only been writing since last September. You have like 12 books.
I have a lot. Yeah, this is all I do. I don't have friends. I don't have a social life. It's just smut wall to wall all day long.
Wow, you are in good hands here, though, because that is pretty much what everybody listening is like, I'm pretty sure. So at least that's what I'm like. I do have a question. Your co-author, can you tell me her name? I don't know how to pronounce it.
J.L. Logish.
Logish. Okay, there's like an S-Z situation.
Yes.
That I was like not at all sure how, and I keep talking about you guys in my Instagram stories. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I can't say your co-author's name though, because I'm afraid I'm going to butcher it. So I just like don't say it, which is almost worse. But okay, Logish. Logish. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Okay, so the first book that I read by you was your Thanksgiving leftover story, which is not technically, I know you got a little bit of heat for this, it is not technically a romance novel because they do turn back into food at the end, so it would be more accurately classified as erotica, correct?
Yeah, we've been talking about maybe doing, honestly, I'm probably going to grab that and read, because JL, to go back and to explain how the hell we met each other, I have never talked to this woman on the phone, which I think is hilarious. We have written 5 books together and we've written together for almost a year, and I have no idea, like I've seen one video by her. She put up a video like 6 months into writing together. I met her in a meme thread on Twitter for the Consumer Product Safety Commission. And she was joking how she was going to do a sexy story about a charred skeleton that they put up as a joke and a meme for, you know, what are your Christmas tree? And she did. And it hit like number one in the category. And I was like, do you want to write about like weird Thanksgiving smut? And she's like, do I? And then we were in a Google Doc and we made the damn book. But she came from the fanfic world. So, and I am awful in point of view. I shouldn't be. I have all these damn books. But if you put a gun to my head and asked me how to describe point of, I can't, I don't know. Every time I remember it, my brain just ejects it. So we wrote as if the reader were the person in the story, which is a completely unfamiliar way to write for me, but I did it for her sake. She was used to doing that. And after we did it, we never did it again. And I was like, I'm going to go back and rewrite that in a point of view that people don't hate.
Cause is that second point of view when it's like you, it's like you stroke somewhat, that right?
Yeah,
like I know that is really big in fan fiction, because like in fan fiction people do want to feel like they are the
the self-insert, which is fine. Yeah. And it's a perfectly valid way to write. It was just so unfamiliar for me, and I feel like that came through on the page, and I would like to correct that. And so would she said, yeah, let's rewrite it. So we're probably going to continue that and maybe tuck in like an HEA at the end, because we did, we got a lot of heat, because I thought it was cute. I was like, oh, another food again. And it was like, oh, was it a dream? And everybody's like, I hate you and I hope you die. And I was like, I really need
you're to- like, no, Vera, she needs to end up with the Thanksgiving leftovers forever.
Oh God. So yeah, and that it was an unexpected hit. People really liked it. So we're like, hey, why don't we just keep doing this friggin' weird shit? And we did. And so now we're at 5 books. The Back for Seconds, A Reverse Harem Feast, was for Thanksgiving. And then we did Regifted, Ganged by the Ghost of Christmas, which is a gender bent Scrooge and 4 horny ghosts, which we're proud of that one.
That was a good one. That might be, I think the dragon one might have taken the top notch. I'll let you keep explaining them, but I think that the Regifted might be my favorite one in the series so far. It was like weirdly touching, like emotional.
We were at the end and we're like, aw, and we were happy with it. And it did pretty well. It was at least as popular as the Thanksgiving one. And then what was the next one? Oh, shit. I should know. Oh yeah, Ruby and the V-Day Vampires.
Mm-hmm. That one was hot. That was very hot.
It was just straight banging from the beginning. I loved it.
It was a middle-aged divorced woman going through either going through menopause, or she already went through menopause, who is getting absolutely railed in the back of a van by a bunch of shape-shifting vampires, which was cool. Yep. You know, they're not pretty sparkly vampires, or even like you know, they shape-shift into, basically I picture them as like less stone gargoyles.
Yeah, like big bat wings. Yeah. One dude's like this really fucking dorky LARPer, and we were really proud of him because he's an unapologetic dorky LARPer. And they're endearing. We like writing our endearing men, and our low key thing that we shove into like just about every story is at least one of them has to have an unusual hobby for a man. If you look through our books, almost all of at least one of the men in our harem always has like an unusual, you know, crochet or macrame or, you know, paint by number. Because you know what? It needs to be normalized. Let guys have fun, for Christ's sakes, you know?
Your fetishes. You managed to cram like a lot of kinks and fetishes into each book. And my favorite is that I made my reel recently about foot fetishes and how like they're not acknowledged in the romance community, and that is a shame because they're actually like kind of a sexy fetish. And Vera like commented, and she's like, are we like on the same wavelength? And I was like, do not tell me that your upcoming book has a fucking foot fetish in it. And it did, and it was hot. I have no complaints about it whatsoever. I'm glad.
We talked, I think, more about that particular plot point than anything else that went into that damn book, because we wanted to, because just as a background, and I'm not shy about it at all, I have been a part of the BDSM community for 20 plus years now. That's how I met my husband. So I feel like I probably have more insight into the less heard of fetishes than most people, because I know people with them and I can ask like, hey, how do you feel when, and what do you look for in? And I have people I can tap to ask about this kind of stuff in an authentic way, because yeah, it's, you know, there's a little bit of comedic value, humor, you know, it's funny. She's got this big giant hulking dragon and he just like loses his shit over feet. I think that's funny. I have I don't know if it'll show up, but I did these stickers. It says Rev's just going through some stuff, and it's got a foot and like this dragon eye and a little anime sweat drop on it.
Vera has like absolutely bonkers merch. Like it's unbelievable. It'll pop up. Plus if you're not following her already, you probably should, because I crack up whenever she has like a what did you post on your Facebook? Your whole collection of like silicone dildos.
Oh yeah, that's the other thing too. In addition to being part of that community, I started, I guess, writing in general many, many years ago as a copywriter. I answered an ad on Craigslist. Like all of my bad life decisions have somehow led to good. I answered an ad on Craigslist for, they were looking for a buyer. It turned out to be, at the time, the largest adult toy site on the internet.
So they're looking for people on Craigslist, employees on Craigslist.
They were looking for specifically a corporate buyer to buy dildos in bulk. Wow. And so I took that job, and for a couple of years, I was going out to Vegas to the Adult Video News Awards, you know, the whole circuit. So I know way more about toys than most people. And that's where the little ones come in, because I was doing a lot of work for the indie silicone industry. And on my website, actually, at the bottom of my website, I have a list of over 100 silicone manufacturers, Indian manufacturers, because I'm very passionate about medical grade silicone toys because they're body safe for women. And this is my own personal soapbox. I won't go too into it, but a lot of the toys sold for women are made out of materials that are actually over time unsafe. They leach chemicals into our business and it can give you cervical cancer, like anything jelly. If anything has a scent up to it, when you take it out of the package, do not put it in your body because it's leaching chemicals. That's why I like silicone. Silicone's inert. You can boil it. You can clean it in a 10% bleach solution and it's safe. So I'm very big on promoting silicone toys for women because they're safe and it's easy to have fun when it's not leaching chemicals into you.
Okay, so not only you're the representative, the BDSM representation in your books is authentic, you have all this dildo knowledge that you can share with the world.
I try.
I can't believe it took you so long to start writing romance. It seems like everything in your life led to you being able to write like an amazing book, and it took you until last September.
I've been having a really good time. I joke that writing was my pre-midlife crisis. I'll be 40 in September, I was bored during the pandemic. I was like, I'm gonna do this. In my first book, which was Stowaway and Silent Song, completely fucking flopped. Like nobody except some very bold friends of mine read it. And I was like, well, maybe I'm just not built for this, but hell, I wrote a book. And then I'm from Jersey and I like the Jersey Devil. I always have. Mm-hmm. And Monster Romance was starting to really get up there. And I was like, well, you know, maybe I'll give this one more shot. And I wrote Carnal Cryptids for in a month. I did sprints with in a sprint room and I wrote it like 3,000 words at a time. And that book took off and I was like, okay, well, maybe not, maybe I'll do this.
And I do want to pop in. We've been talking a lot about like the absolute like crazy stuff that Vera is writing with her co-author, but the first thing I actually read from you was Carnal Cryptids. Oh, and I'm not sure how I came across it. I think it was in the Monster group that somebody recommended it or I saw an ad for it or something, but this book, guys, so it's reverse harem. And it's, I didn't actually know what a cryptid was. I'd never heard that like term, even though I watched like all the Bigfoot shows and like, I was already reading Monster Romance at the time, but cryptids are like those things that those like stories you believe in, you know, Bigfoot, Slenderman, the Jersey Devil, I know you have Champ from Lake Champlain, but what is the Nessie?
Nessie out in Scotland, you know, the creatures that, you know, everybody swears exists, you know, I got a picture once and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So this book was so hot though. It tips a little bit into like some dubious consent, even like maybe a little non-con, except for it's more non-con that she's basically being held against her will, but everything sexual is consensual. And I like absolutely fell in love with it. Like this, I was like Googling, I'm like, what does the Jersey Devil look like? Yep, would bang that. What does Champ look like? Okay, I'm not sure, but he's so cute in the book. I would probably, okay, I'll still bang him. And then Mothman is the third one. Mm-hmm. And I love reverse harems where the men are intimate as well. Yep. I don't have anything against where it's like they're individual relationships with the woman, but I just love when you get to see like the men having their relationship as well. And so when you were writing this, so you knew you wanted to write about the Jersey Devil. How did you pick his like two mates and their personalities? Because this book is written so well.
The book came easy to me because I leaned heavily on source material that I was familiar with. I'm from New Jersey. I grew up in New Jersey 27 years. And my father's family is from Burlington, Vermont. So I grew up as a little girl. My dad constantly yelling at me, when he wanted me to get in the water, you better get out of there or Champ's going to eat you. So, I mean, you know, it had the opposite effect. So, and, you know, Mothman just, I wanted something with wings. And I was like, okay. And Mothman was kind of like, a lot of people were talking about him. And I happened to hit at a weird time in Monster Romance where I guess we were all kind of simultaneously writing about Mothman and didn't realize. But I mean, you've seen my Mothgang graphic. I made the hashtag.
Yes, Vera does amazing graphics. If you follow her because she'll tell you who all the gargoyle romances are, all the Mothman romances. Like, I think you did Minotaur as well.
Yeah, I did Minotaur and I have to expand it, honestly, because there's a couple of slots for extra ones that are coming out and I want to make sure I get as many people as I can, and I want to do for Lizard Man and things like that.
Oh man, Lizard Men are hot right now.
They are, right?
Not off the presses. Do they all have double dicks? Like, I think it's the double dick thing. Every Lizard one I've read, they've had two dicks.
It's believable because that's, I guess, it's something that actually occurs in Lizards. And for me, I had a lot of fun because it was, I'm in a lot of group chats. I always joke, you know,
You'd be in a lot of group chats.
I'm in a lot of group chats. I call myself the chaotic capybara because anytime somebody needs to like pass a message to somebody else, they go through me. Like they'll be like, hey, tell Vera, she might know somebody who. And I get a lot of random messages from people that I haven't spoken to before because I'm kind of like this weird, like, you know, switchboard operator for, you know, a lot of the community because I want to connect, especially new authors, to the resources they need. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Lost my train of thought here. God, it's been a long day.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's been a long day here. My son is teething. And so I had to literally wait to call Vera because he was just screaming. My husband trying to put him down. He was just screaming in the background. I'm like, well, I cannot do a podcast with my child screeching behind me. I need a soundproof booth or something, but yeah, what I have is hollow doors.
A curtain foam. Yeah, I got eight cats, but my office is a cat-free zone because once you lose a couple of chapters because one of my cats decides to stomp on the keyboard, I'm like, you know what? That's a lesson that I'm going to learn and take to heart so they don't come in here anymore.
My husband finally put a door on his office because our cat, Sophie, is obsessed with him and just wants to sit on his lap during all of his calls, but she's like not calm about it. She just like screams and howls and like purrs and it's a whole thing. So yeah, I you are not the only one who's learned that cats probably don't belong in an office where you're trying to work. I think we were talking about
Mothman. Yeah, because I was horrified because I started reading. Of course, I was a voracious reader. I read very, very quickly. I read like 400 books in like 6 months, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna do my own now because my eyes hurt. And one of my very favorite authors was Beatrice Hollow. She wrote Cupid Psycho. And I loved her work so much. And I, you know, a little bit of fangirl going on. And right when I was finishing Carnal Cryptids, she starts promoting her Run and Hide series. I think it's like Run and there's three books in the series and I always get them mixed up, but I believe it's Myths and Monsters is the official name of the trio of books. And I found out she had a Mothman in hers. And we had just started talking. Like, so I was like, you know, nervously standing outside the stage door with my signature, you know, book, like fangirling at her. And I'm like, oh God, she's gonna think. Cause I had no idea she was even writing a series, let alone that there was a Mothman in there. And I was like mortified. I was like, she's gonna think I'm stealing her ideas. But she was actually like really cool. I was just freaking out over nothing. But, and now we're like super, super good buddies. I talk to her every day in the group chat. But just a whole bunch of Mothmen came out at the same time, which I thought was really funny.
They did. It's just people responding to the demands of the audience. And everybody was like, we want a hot Mothman. And they got like 80 at the same time. And it was perfection. Yours was the first Mothman I read, though. And honestly, I don't think I just loved him. He was in charge, like large and in charge, mm-hmm. and like the head of his group and so responsible. And I was like, yeah, like, this is my vibe. Like, I'm not here for like reckless men. I'm here for daddies. Everyone knows I'm here for daddies. And he had total dad. I think I wrote in my review, I'm like, daddy vibes. Like, was just like, he was mine. I haven't read a Mothman that measures up yet. All the Mothmen are great, but he's still my favorite. You said you read 400 books in like 4 months. And I'm curious. So you write some of the weirdest stuff I've ever read, but what's the weirdest book that you've ever read? Like, what do you think takes the cake in terms of just like sheer bonkersness?
Oh Lord.
This is also a hard question. Cause now you have to sift through a memory of like literally 1,000 books probably on the spot. I'm just like, oops, sorry.
Well, the two that come to mind right away, one of them was like written, I think, with the same gravitas, if I can even say that. It sounds fucking ridiculous. Like I'm going for a Peabody Award. there's a wonderful author by the name of Mia Harlan. And she infamously wrote her Donut Shifters, and that, yes! I think that's the title, her Donut Shifters. I was admittedly a little bit confused getting in, because I think it was part of like a shared world series, and that was the only one I read, so I think not that you needed to read the others, but I think maybe I was missing some world building context. And like one of the shifters, like they were all donut themed shifters, but one of them was like a stress toy, and that definitely I was like, all right, that threw me for a loop. And I believe, because now she and I are friends, I think she wrote something with like a sentient espresso machine, and I mean, I gotta give a prop on that. But the straight up weirdest one I think I read, and I don't even remember the name of it. I could probably come up with it if you want to link it, but it was, and I spent a dollar on it, I'll give them this, they got a dollar out of me. It was a pumpkin spice latte thing. And I mean, everybody knows that one.
I'm writing it down.
I'll find the thing for you.
But it probably isn't too hard to track down. I imagine if I pipe in pumpkin spice latte fucking into Google. Yeah. Actually, that might get weird. That could go down into like a food fetish situation. Yeah, I'm not going to type that.
I did not want video. I wanted the book. But it was never really clear. The book was only like 12 pages, like dead serious. It was like 12 goddamn pages. A dollar out of me. I counted, I live tweeted as I read it, how many times Starbucks appeared, because I was shocked at how bold they were. I was like, y'all are really like playing with God here, invoking the name of Starbucks, the holy name of Starbucks on every page here. They're gonna sue you to oblivion, but I guess it counts as satire? I mean,
probably. You're fucking a drink, it's probably satire. It's like, so hard to know though.
It's like, I want to bring this to court. I want to have a serious lawyer and be like, well, actually, you know,
just yeah,
like
Starbucks would have to first take the latte fucking book authors to court. And I don't know if that, they say all publicity is good publicity, but that might be too weird of publicity for Starbucks.
But it was the whole thing, it was like 12 pages. They mentioned Starbucks, I think, like 47 times. Like they said the name so often, and it wasn't clear what was going on, but it was heavily insinuated that like she spilled the pumpkin spice latte on herself and it like fucked her. It was like, what? You don't really know what happened. It just sounded like, and the whole time I'm tweeting, I was like, who is cleaning up this mess? Because I know it's sticky, and they're just ignoring the fact that it's all over the floor. That's when my age enters into it. I was like, this is just irresponsible. There's no closer here. Who's mopping the floor? Like, I felt very strongly about the fact that they're just spilling pumpkin spice. It's like, okay, get your fuck on, but who's cleaning?
And it was like, so I don't know if you, I don't think you've ever read, have you read Finley Fenn's Orc books?
I mean, I haven't, but it's like one of those things, like when my husband explains Stranger Things to me, I know enough to understand the memes.
Probably just from every single reel I do where I'm holding a freaking Orc book, but it just makes me laugh because the whole reason, like, she actually created a maid in book 6, is that the heroine is a maid, to come into Orc Mountain to address all the readers who were like, who is cleaning up all this cum? Like, these women are dripping cum out of them all day, every day. Who the fuck is doing laundry in this place? And so she was like, ha ha ha, I'm putting a maid into the story. And so the maid, actually Alma, I believe is her name, she actually like takes over the laundry room, so we get like a behind the scenes glimpse at the laundry room for the orcs and the process and how they flood the mountain every so often, so to like eliminate all the cum from the hallways. Like, I was like, oh my god, she put so much thought into it.
I mean, readers do not understand how much, like, I'm sure they're like, oh, well, what about this plot? You don't know, like, the weird shit we discuss en masse in these group chats of, like, 20 to 30 of us. Be like, hey, you know, like, I know Cleo, for instance, Cleo Evans, who writes the Creature Cafe series, which is phenomenal. She and I are actually, we're in a combined pen name, Pamela Bones. Mm-hmm. We are writing a dinosaur smut series later on this year.
Yes, what the world needs more of, because I heard the other dinosaur book that like floats around a lot about what is it, like Allosaurus Summer or something?
Oh yeah, the Wet Hot Allosaurus Summer. And then
I'm not actually convinced it is an it has an HEA. I haven't read it. I heard there's like vor in it, and vor is like the act of like eating another person. Yeah. Like it's a fetish, like a kink. I mean, it's like it's more of like a fantasy, I guess. Like you don't. A few people have actually gone through with it. Google it if you want, but yeah, so but I'm like, I don't know how that ends happy, but I'm also not gonna pay like $3.99 to find out, so I'll let that be someone else's like secret to reveal to me. I do want to talk about, so you are a self-proclaimed cover addict, so you tend to just shop for these pre-made book covers. And how many do you think you have in your collection right now?
Right now I probably have, I think it's still under 20, I think.
Okay, that's not too bad. It is not, a lot not, though, for books. So you buy the cover before you like write a story.
Well, these days a lot, because when I first started, and this is a story I tell a lot, when I started Stowaway and Silent Song, even now when you look at it, we have to pay attention to the babies that are making us money, unfortunately. I mean, as much as we'd love to devote love and attention to every single one of our, it pays my mortgage, and I have to go and spend attention to the things that are making me money. Mm-hmm. Stowaway is not popular. I think it's a great book. I'm biased, but I use the Kindle cover creator, and you could tell that's like a last minute science fair the next day project looking cover. It's just like a splash of water. So when Carnal Cryptids, when I wrote that, I was like, okay, yeah, I definitely need a good cover. I like freaked out. I was like, because when you don't know how to find a cover, there's no guidebook to being an author. So you're just kind of standing there on Facebook, like, who do I talk to? Who do I get a cover for? I mean, there's very predatory cover people that are, oh yeah, I'll do a cover for you, you know, $500. They make it sound like $500, $600, $1,000 is normal for a new author to be spending on a cover. And that's, well, you can spend that. And some people obviously are worth that with their art talent. That's not a requirement. Mm-hmm. Most authors, especially indie and newbie authors, use pre-made covers, which graphic designers create like a whole bunch of them, and they'll sell them either first come first serve or in these like events online. Mm-hmm. And you get them, and they can change small things sometimes, like hair color or font, and obviously they change the title of the author. But I didn't know about that. I didn't know that there were these groups, and I had no idea where to start. So I'm talking to like illustrators that are like, oh yeah, it'll take me 4 months to do it, and it'll cost $5. And I was like, well, fuck, I guess I'm not publishing this shit. And then Catherine Moon, who, if you've ever read her stuff, she's infamously the author behind A Lady of Rooksgrave Manor, which is a very, very popular monster romance book.
I recommend it to people as their intro to monster romance all the time. It's like sweet, but crazy.
Yeah, and the new one is great too. And
the new one was even better than the first one. It was unbelievable. It had this whole romantic suspense subplot that like I was actually a little bit scared, and I was like, oh, a little bit of fear going on here. Yeah, she's very talented.
She's extremely talented. And she had a, I believe it was a Discord. I think it was a Discord thing that I had joined, and I was like, ooh, other authors that write kind of the same stuff as I do, and I'm, you know, standing around here like I'm walking up and down Broadway for the first time as a tourist, you know, like, oh my god, these names. And and I'm freaking out in the author channel. I was like, I don't know what to do. And I'm like melting down. And Catherine's like, tell me what your title is and kind of the general vibe. And I was like, it's this. And I'm like really melting down at this point. And like literally like 3.5 minutes later, she's like, what do you think about this? And she sent me the fucking cover. And that's the cover that's on the book. And I used it, and I swear to this day, I say it was a good luck charm, because that's the book that took off. And I will be forever grateful to her, because honestly, it wasn't just the cover. It was the fact that she talked me off the ledge, because I was like really losing it. Because, you know, when you have like 47 tabs open and you have like decision paralysis, and she's just like, she like pulled the plug. She's like, here.
So what I'm hearing is like every author, like newbie author, needs to just like join a group with other authors who can talk them off the ledge constantly.
Yeah. And you know, you stay, I always tell people, listen at least 3 times as often as you talk, because your natural inclination is to, you know, word vomit, you know, like, oh my god, I'm so happy to be here. listen to the conversations, because you'll learn so much listening to other authors talk to other authors, and, you know, kind of follow after them, be like, okay, well, she says that this company is takes too long printing stickers, I don't think I'll go with that one. Mm. You know, you can learn a lot by sitting there and listening, just taking a chair in the room, you know. And that's where I learned a lot of stuff instead of having to learn it the hard way, because I paid attention to where other people stumbled and asked questions, but I try not to make a nuisance out of myself. And now I'm happy to be that for other people. I try and usher in other movie authors whenever I can. You know, like I yanked Gillian Graves from Titan. If you saw her Gargoyle Romance, mm-hmm. I yanked her onto Facebook. I was like, get on Facebook, come on. That's where a lot of us hang out. And I always mispronounce her first name. She's like a really good buddy, and I always mispronounce her first name. Althea Faust, who wrote the Initiation series, which I think she brands as kinky Harry Potter kind of thing. It's a magical, it's great. It's like very D&D lit RPG, wonderful, wonderful kinky book. And I told her, I said, get in KU. And, you know, so I'm dragging like all these people into the club. I was like, everybody needs to read your shit. Come here.
I have noticed on your Facebook page that you're super like help, like you're like the queen of graphics. You're always breaking things down so that like how KU works, and like how, like you were really passionate about that whole thing with people like stealing from authors basically by returning books and all that. So I've appreciated, like, you know, sometimes, especially since I'm not in the author arena, it's some of that stuff is kind of hard for me to understand. And so seeing your graphics and everything helps break it down so I can kind of like come out of my bookstagram-ness and see what authors are going through, or like all the
our natural inclination is to use our tools, which are words, to explain everything. And our readers are great, obviously y'all like to read, but you like to read stories. Mm-hmm. And if you want something to not go viral, because that sounds like self-absorbed, but if you want something to pass around easily, you need to make it a bite-sized chunk that's easy to digest. You need to people can see it at a glance, because, you know, the attention span on the internet is very small. There's a lot to see.
Yes. So my attention span is very small.
You know, and a lot of people are freaking out because Amazon doesn't help. They call. Mm-hmm. When you take a book out in KU, you borrow it like a library and you return it, but they're using the same terminology for returning those books under KU and returning books like, I don't want this anymore, give me my money back. Mm-hmm. And when you use the same terms, people in KU are like paralyzed. They don't want to return anything because they don't want to be that person. But it's like, no, it's okay to return it in KU. So that's what I was trying to explain the difference, because they're not going to do it. God knows.
No, they could care. They could honestly care less about their authors, unfortunately. Okay, so I should have asked this back when I was asking you about the foot fetish situation. I am curious, is there a fetish that you have not yet been able to fit into a book that you just really want to write a character who has this fetish? Or can I send you a list of my fetishes and have you write them into a book?
Just custom smut.
You just covered so many. I just don't know if you have like a list you're pulling them off of, or you like are just every so often you pitch it to your friends like, hey, I need another fetish to write about, or a kink.
There's been a lot covered. I basically anything that I feel thematically would fit with the story, like I don't even know what my writing process is. Honestly, I get like vibes and I kind of stick them together like Velcro. I was like, this would be good with this. Okay, this will work. And the foot fetish thing, like, and it comes out organically when JL and I write together, because we'll be writing and we'll move forward with these characters. She does these great character workups before we start, kind of like the attitude of this one and how this one, and we'll add in like random shit as we write, like hates broccoli, you know, like we'll add in like these like little things that we'll bring in, you know, like in Planet Oster, the haircut scene was something we talked about and added in after we were well into writing, and we have all these little things we add in. And I think I came up with the foot fetish thing for the dragon because we were trying to figure out, because I don't want to give away the plot, you understand it's important because you've read it, you know why it's important that he has that particular fetish. Mm-hmm. And we were trying to figure out how we were going to make that plot device work, you know, while they were still kind of like, we're not going to have sex with her, we're going to respect her and the whole bit. And we're like, well, how the hell can we make this plot device that we need to happen? And she's like, well, how do you get like a guy completely, absolutely uncontrolled? And I was like, well, you know, a fetish. And we're thinking, I was like, what if the dragon has a foot fetish? She's like, that would be great. And it took off from there. And then when we were doing our dorky assigning of their random hobbies, I said, how funny would it be if one of the dragons was in the glass blowing? And she's like, yeah, that'd work. And then
it works like, perfectly. Like it made so, I was like, yeah, yeah. What a perfect hobby for a dragon. Sure.
And that was the first, that was the last book that she and I wrote together. And we're going to, you know, we're still working on others, of course. And then the really funny thing is for all of my weirdness that I've engaged in my life, I guess straight edge isn't exactly the right word. It doesn't mean what it meant when we were younger, but I don't do drugs. I don't, oddly enough, you've read my work, I don't do drugs. I don't smoke pot, and neither does JL. And I have never smoked pot, not once in my life, never done an edible, any of it. And I'm fine
with not recommend. I would not recommend it to anybody.
You know, I'm pro legalization. I just, for myself, I'm not into it. So she and I were talking. We're like, okay, we had decided somehow that the dragons were going to smoke up at some point. And she's like, okay, well, how do bongs work? And I was like, I thought you knew. So we're sitting here Googling how bongs work and sending each other screenshots because we're just that friggin' clueless. And we're like, this is ridiculous. We are grown women researching drugs for dragons.
Like that's the weirdest thing you've researched. Like, that's probably the least weird thing you've researched.
I thought it was funny. There were these two kids cut in school trying to figure out how drugs work. You
know? That scene was actually hilarious in the book. What I love about your books is like, again, like touching on like the fetishes and kinks, like mm-hmm. the books themselves are ridiculous in a good way. Like they're supposed to be hilarious, but they're also incredibly well written. But what I really love is that like, even though the fetishes can be like the butt of a joke within the book or like the kinks can be part of what makes it funny. Mm-hmm. I always feel like you guys are being really respectful of the kinks and fetishes though, which I really appreciate. Cause like, I'm all about like not judging people for like the weird shit that turns them on as long as it is legal mm-hmm. and consensual. But you know, some, especially things like foot fetishes get, mm-hmm. I talk a lot. I do not have a foot fetish, but I feel like I talk so much about them that like everyone listening is going to be like, she definitely has a foot fetish. Like, oh, no. My husband's feet are super ugly. I do not have a foot. But I know that they're ugly. So do I. Okay.
Tell it on yourself.
But yeah, I just feel like your books are also really, really respectful of kinks and you're not like tearing the person down or they're not being bullied or made fun of in the book because of like the weird thing that turns them on. No, and I love that.
It's not, you know, because being in the community as long as I have, you know, and as for myself too, I am very openly, I used to say I was bisexual, but it's still valid, you know, way to consider yourself, but it's kind of, a lot of it's shifting towards pansexual. So I kind of use both interchangeably for myself, even though they're distinct, but, you know, and I'm also a lifelong pagan. And you've probably seen every once in a while on the holidays, I'll post something. But that's a me thing. But I've also experienced a lot of discrimination to a much smaller scale. Obviously, you know, I can walk through society without being stopped or side-eyed because of the things that make me different are things that I can keep to myself if I so choose, which is a very different experience than folks who don't have that mm-hmm. ability. So it's very important to me. Because even though I write this batshit stuff, I have a platform. I have a lot of eyes on the stuff that I write. And I feel like I have at least somewhat of a duty to give somebody who might feel like they don't show up on the page very often something. You know, like, it's okay that you feel this. It's okay that you are interested in this. There is nothing wrong with that. As long as it is a legal, consensual adult that you are doing this with, that's sentient, there is absolutely nothing wrong with that because anybody can say no at any time. And as long as their no is respected, that's all that matters. You know, we have a saying in the the community, you know, your kink is not my kink and that's okay. And they abbreviate it as letters. And don't yuck someone else's yum. There are things, I don't have a foot fetish, but I talked to foot fetishists so that when we wrote about it, it was at least passably realistic. You know, this is kind of like the way that they, and it was important that his mates understood that and accepted that about him, because nobody wants to be in a relationship with somebody that ridicules you for something that you like. And, you know, I don't want people to walk away from any of my books feeling bad. I want them to feel validated. I want them to feel happy. I want them to have read a story that resonates with them in some way. And even if it's a weird way, you know, it's entertainment. And if it makes you feel bad, that's not entertaining. That's, you're paying for anti-therapy. And that's, that doesn't strike me.
That's a great word for it. You're absolutely correct. And you know? Yeah, so that's why that absolutely comes through in your writing and in your books. And that's why I just love that I can get to know all these other like kinks and fetishes and know that like they're, I mean, I didn't know that you were a member of the BDSM community. So like now I do, and I can see, I can tell that in your writing that it does come from a place of not necessarily experience of like the acts themselves, but experience in the community itself. So we don't have too much time left, but I do want to know, what are you, you're using a pen name, but are the people in your life familiar with your books?
Yes.
Your family, does your husband read your books?
I work off of a Chromebook because I hate computers. Computers hate me. I'm a walking EMP. But I work off of a Chromebook, which any of my author friends will know. Amazon absolutely will not let you do anything with formatting a book to upload. So I can write on Google Docs just fine. Getting it into friggin' KDP into Amazon is like impossible. So I got to go downstairs and use my husband's icky boy computer and his dirty desk with like Cheeto dust on it. And I've got to go down there and upload everything. And I'm a deadline writer. It's a terrible habit and I have to stop it, but I'm a deadline writer. So I'm always down there.
Well, it seems to be working. So don't stop. Just it's going well.
So I upload it. And then when it's uploaded, I get this like full body, like sigh of relief. And I have to like walk in the other room and get cold water because my blood pressure is like 8,000 and it's always up on his computer. So he'll read it. And it's funny because I forgot, I had just uploaded Squeak and I forgot it was on his computer and I had gone out and he messaged me. He's like, it was good. And I was like, what was good? He's like, Squeak. I was like, oh shit, you read it. So he read that last night and he's like, do you want some constructive criticism? Absolutely fucking not. Not from you. No.
There are some people who are meant for constructive criticism and I firmly believe that that person is not, in most cases, your partner. Because yeah. I once wrote I dabble in writing. I have like 150 like partially written stories on my computer. And one time I made the mistake of letting my husband read it. And he came back with like a bunch of like critique. And I was like, but I'm like 10,000 words in. I do not need critique right now. What I need is for you to tell me the parts of it that you love. And then like, that's it. And then like, shut your mouth politely. Yeah. And so it kind of ruined that story for me. And I wasn't able to really, you know, you're only 10,000 words in. You don't want that. Like serious critique yet. Like wait until I get all the way to the end and then like maybe give me some advice. But it went really, really quite terrible for him. Okay, so now that you've mentioned Squeak again.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about Squeak. So what came first, the cover or the story idea?
Honestly, it's in my dedication, I dedicated it to Beatrix Hala. You know, like I said, we talk a lot. I'm very fortunate to have her as a friend. I talk with her, Ashley Bennett, who wrote Muscles and Monsters, and Cleo Evans.
Which we are discussing next week. Michaela and I will be talking about vaguely about Muscles and Monsters. It's not really a review of Muscles and Monsters, like we loved it. It's more like us going off on tangents related to whether wolf monsters can have chocolate. It's like a big topic of discussion.
There you go. Excellent.
Sorry for interrupting. That was a perfect plug. Next episode.
She's got a new one coming out. She's got a lot of great stuff. But I'm friends with the three of them and we talk a lot. Beatrix is sometimes a night owl. I'm the most night owl, I think, of the four of us, because I'm always up to like 3 in the morning. And that night, Beatrix happened to be up late and we were talking, and I'm diagnosed ADHD, as are a lot of writers. I'm on Adderall, and I have a sundowning effect. I'm an extended release, but you can tell at like the stroke of like 6:45 in the evening, I start talking a lot faster and there's a lot less filter. And so I get zoomies late at night, and I start talking, I get punchy. And we were talking about Omegaverse or something that night. And she's always joking about clowns. Beatrix likes clowns. And we got into the discussion of balloon animals, and I was like, you know, so but what about a balloon animal Omegaverse? Because they already have knots. And I thought it was like a really stupid fucking pun. And I have Canva, which is a graphics program that a lot of indie authors use to
love make. Canva. It's a gift to this universe.
I'd get a tattoo of Canva icon at this point. I love it so much. But the problem is that it enables me. So when I have these completely off the wall batshit ideas, it's literally a click away to make a cover. It's like I can make covers for these terrible ideas in seconds. And I made that in probably about 3.5 minutes. And after all the drama I went through with my first cover, it's hilarious to me that I'm making them now. And I made it, and I was like, ha, how funny would this be? And they were like, oh, it'd be so funny. And then I put up a pre-order. I was like, fuck.
You're like, oh, it's so funny. You're like already typing it. You're like,
wouldn't it be funny? Yeah. So it's weird even for me. I had to really do some mental gymnastics to do where balloon animal shifters come from. So like they're men, they're sentient adult men, but they also can transform into, you know, balloon animals, like little inflatable poodle looking things, not actual dogs or animals, but like balloon animals. And so they can selectively transform certain parts of themselves and inflate or deflate them as need be.
Do they need condoms, Vera, or are they their own condoms?
So they can't reproduce.
Oh, that's good, honestly. People are a little bit sick of I know a lot of people are sick of the breeding trope, because it's so prominent right now in monster and alien romance, so people will be pleased to know.
They can't canonically they cannot breed. And I have worked in a origin story of tulpas, which are creatures that are made from thought, because I could not, like, I'm thinking, like, how the hell do these things come about? And I was like, well, okay, if somebody really thinks hard about this, and they want servants to do this, and this is the stuff that is around them environmentally, then they can combine the two, and that's what happens. And they have run away from the circus, my two men in the story. It's an MMF, the men are involved, because I am a one-trick pony, and by God, that pony has at least two dicks.
People like the multiple dick. Either you got to give us one guy with two, or you got to give us two guys with each one, because that's what people expect from you, Vera.
My sweet spot is 3 M's, 1 F, but I did a menage this time around, just to keep it real. And they just funnel cake icing, so have fun with that. I will send you a copy.
Okay, so at the time that this is released, this book will be out, so you should go and get it. And it's on KU. Correct?
Yeah, it is on KU. It's just Squeak. If you search the word Squeak and Vera Valentine, it'll come up. It's got a purple and a red balloon animal dog on the cover. Very, very easy to spot.
How many romance novels have balloon animals on the cover?
And not enough. Not enough. There is no clown in it. I would like to reassure people, because I know that is a looming concern for some people. There is no clown. I purposely kept clowns out of it. You don't have to worry. There is no surprise clown.
That's actually a pretty common fear. I don't think I have that fear, but I've never really come face to face with like a real clown to test. I've been like face to face with like just a children's clown, but I feel like if I was face to face with like a full on dedicated career clown, like I might take a couple steps back. Like that passion, I can't, I'm not kink shaming or fetish shaming, but that is a passion I do not fully understand, and I'm fearful of that level of commitment.
Yes.
That's why I've only dated one person longer than a year. I fear commitment. That person is my husband. Okay, so I do have one other question, and this is just for anybody who's listening who's like, I have a crazy idea for a book, but I'm too afraid to put it out there. Like, what do you recommend that somebody, a budding author who maybe is, has all these ideas and maybe has put them to paper, but is kind of afraid of what people might, how people might react to their ideas. Mm-hmm. What, do you have any advice for these people who might feel some shame about their crazy ideas?
No, like I said, I'm going to be 40 next month. I own my house, I pay taxes, and I vote. And honestly, if anybody has anything to say to me, I don't care. I don't care. Stop, like, literally, as long as you're not hurting somebody or putting forth hurtful ideas, like, you know, racist or homophobic or any of that, literally just stop giving a fuck. Because I did, like, when I did the author thing, I was freaking out over trying to find a cover, but at no point did it ever occur to me to have shame for what I wrote. And I mean, I'm lucky that I don't have that, but work in the adult industry, once you've done a couple of those shows, like, there is, like, way weird. Whatever you think you're writing, I guarantee you someone's writing something weirder, stranger, more on the edge. It's okay. There is so much room here for so many people.
That person is probably you, Vera. Yeah. You're probably the weirder person writing the weirder shit.
I keep getting tagged in weird shit. I have unfortunately painted myself into a corner. People keep like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if you wrote like a dehumidifier porn? And I was like, no, guys, I'm busy, please.
But at the same time, your mind's like, but maybe.
But maybe, but what if? Yeah,
dehumidifier porn.
Somebody somewhere is writing it. Get a Google Doc. And anybody that comes up to you and tells you you need to spend hundreds or thousands of dollars to publish a book is lying. They are straight up lying. I'm here to tell you they're lying. Some people do need editing. I'm not gonna mince words about that. I'm lucky that I was a copywriter before, so my work's fairly clean. I do my own editing. But you know, you do want to pay a fair rate for cover artists, the editors. You know, everybody deserves to be paid for their craft. But you know, get your story out there. What's the absolute worst that could happen? What is the absolute worst? I always play the worst case scenario game and I spin it out to, and then Russia launches nukes, you know, and I bring, you know, and when you put it in that ass, it's ridiculous to worry. Mm-hmm. You make up a pen name. Nobody ever knows you put it out. You know, you put it out. And then when you're laying in bed at night thinking about your achievements, you can be like, I put out a goddamn book. And I mean, that's a good feeling. Put out a little novella. Doesn't have to be a certain number of words. That damn pumpkin spice latte thing that got friggin' a dollar out of me. It was 12 fucking pages, you know, and good. And I'm not even mad about it. Good for them, because they ranked, which means that more than me bought that book. And so, I mean, if somebody can write a 12 page story about a sentient pumpkin spice latte fucking people and making an absolute mess out of the floor, whatever the hell you've got rattling around your head, bring it to life. Get yourself a pre-made cover or make one. Get Canva. It's $12 a month. Make your own cover. You know, look at what other people are doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and anybody's free to friend me on Facebook. You know, I'm very open and I'll point them in the right direction. If you're thinking about it, just do it. The worst that could happen is that it doesn't take off and, oh, well, you've written a book.
I like that perspective. That's like, I mean, you know, I have an issue with finishing. Like, that's... That was sexual. But finishing a book, I have a problem with finishing a book when I'm when I'm writing, and so that's my issue. But I feel like if I came up with something like absolutely bonkers, like knowing that there's authors like you and the donut shifter author and the pumpkin spice latte author, it's like there is nothing stopping me from putting out, like, literally I can't even think of something weirder than something that already exists. So there's nothing stopping anybody.
Yeah, we have Rule 34 for visual. I mean, it's not going to stop at visual. Rule 34 applies to text too. I wrote, and one day I might publish. I have a 3/4 of the way finished Olive Garden fanfic because it didn't exist, and that made me angry. I was
How
like,
are the breadsticks involved, Vera?
There were breadsticks involved. You know there were. You can't have something that phallic on the table without doing something with it. It's just, you know, have fun with it. None of us are going to make it out of here alive. Just enjoy it. you know?
I think there's definitely a mark. Like, I think the reason that these, and now I'm going off on a tangent when I was like, last question. I think the reason that these books have really taken off, and not, I mean, monster romance in general and alien romance, but also these like absolutely crazy ones, is because we're like in such a shit place in the world right now that everyone's just looking for the next way to like disassociate and further. Like, I can no longer just disassociate with like elves. Like, no, I need fucking donut shifters. Like, I need to have my mind shut down for 14,000 words or even a full book and just come out of it and be like, what the fuck did I just read? But you know what? That was a short period of time in which I believed in a world where donuts could fuck people. I did hear that there's no hole fucking in the donut book, though. Can you
kind of? Well, you know what? I mean, Mia could always write an additional, you know, and bring that back if she really wanted to. Like, there is always some stuff. I managed to work, and I was very proud on this, and Squeak. It was right at the end, but I did manage to work in static electricity bondage because I promised that. Perfect. and I delivered. And there is a twisting of a penis into anal beads. So I'm proud of that.
Oh my God, Vera, you're making it sound so good.
And it's 14,000 words of just absolute fucking weirdness.
Anal beads do not get enough of a presence in romance novels. They just don't.
And I, you know, like, and you know, again, going back to the being, you know, conscious about kink, when we were writing Regifted, originally, and you know, spoiler here, Marley's chain was supposed to go in her ass. And I talked to JL and I said, okay, listen, from a sex toy standpoint, this is unsafe. Nothing goes in the butt if it doesn't have a flanged base, because anything can get lost up the butt, but the cervix stops it from getting lost in the vagina. So, you know, this is, you know, conscious consumerist. Like, all right, the chain has to shift to her vagina.
Honestly, I love this behind the scenes of like just you being really careful with the weird shit you're putting out to make sure it's at least somewhat up to health standards.
Yeah, you know, it's like the OSHA of, you know, weird shifter fucking. That's
that should just be like, you should have a business card with that written on it, and people can hire you to make sure their kink is like above board.
Like, I had people bring me, you know, like, hey, this scene, does this make sense, is this, you know, appropriate? And I think a lot of readers would be surprised at how conscientious we are with the stuff we write. Like, I know for a fact, like C. Rochelle, who wrote the Rise of the Witch series and who wrote the 12 Hunks of Herculea, and she's doing the sequel to that now.
I've heard of that one. That one's been, I've been seeing that around.
It was very good. She and I had a frank discussion about, because a lot of us are obviously the breeder themes, like you were mentioning, we're talking about pregnancy in our books because, you know, it's something that does have to be addressed. And she wanted to make sure that she was treating a scene where they discuss birth control with the appropriate level of sensitivity, given that Roe versus Wade just happened at that time. So we do have these discussions, and we do try very hard not to put our foot in it. Sometimes we do, and we have to do retractions and be like, we screwed up on this, sorry about that. But we do think about it, and we do our best to be, you know, ethical in the way that we write and the stuff we portray. Even DubCon and the trigger warnings, content warning, that's a whole conversation that constantly is had. But we do try and respect our readers because we care about you guys and we want you to have a good time, and that means not portraying something in a bad light that doesn't need to be portrayed in a bad light.
I feel like I'm sitting in like just the best like romance writing like lecture that I've ever sat in. Like, I'm like motivated to write right now, and that never happens because there are too many good books for me to read to like write that's my point of view right now, is that like I need to put my passion into like promoting books by authors I love, and like maybe one day down the line I can refocus my attention on writing my own stuff. But there's just too much good shit out there right now, and like I can't even breathe. I can't take time to breathe. I need to just be reading and reading the weird shit, the like weird amazing shit, then like the contemporary amazing shit that's like not weird. Like, just it's hard going back to human peen, I won't lie. It's difficult for me. I said like last question like a long time ago, but I do have one last question for you. And that is, which book of yours do you love the most? which is the worst question I can ask. But and just like what, like it can be for any reason. It can be because it was your most popular book, or because it was like it just a piece of you went with it. I'm just curious because like I know which one is my favorite, and I know Planet Aster was a fan favorite, right?
That honestly one. I you know, Carnal Cryptids is always going to be, I love Stowaway, it was my first one, and I love Carnal Cryptids, it was my first successful one, and I love the men in Carnal Cryptids. Mm. I love the men in Carnal Cryptids too as well, but I still have more in that vein of the story to write, so it's not really done, so it's hard for me to kind of encompass it in my head. Mm-hmm. Honestly, gun to my head, I'd have to say Planet Oster. I adored the way that book came together, the plot, you know, and people, obviously there will be people who disagree. I feel like it is so fucking on point. JL and I worked magic with that. Just every idea we had and bounced off of each other, and the words flowed, and we worked together so well on it. And I was astounded at how well it came out. Enough so
it
that
really did.
To date, that is the only book that I have in print.
Wow. Are none of your books are available? Are they available in print?
No,
only ebooks.
It's not because I don't want to. It's because the formatting is something I can't really do myself, and that is an additional cost.
I've heard it's so difficult to do yourself.
And you have to do what they call a wrap cover. So an ebook cover, it's just a flat picture, and that's fine. It's a rectangle, no big deal. But when you're doing a paperback, it has to be like a taco, and it has to be just wide enough on the spine to fit all the pages. There's a lot of considerations that go into it. So, and then the original designer that did your pre-made cover or whatever, they may or may not be available to do the wrap to match. So with Oster, JL made the cover. JL is actually like this surprise, amazing graphic artist. She's on my Canva account. And this is another thing that I tell everybody, because I'm so fucking impressed with her. She does everything on her phone. She does not own a computer.
What?
All of the writing and the covers that she's made, all on her phone.
That literally. Legit, like my, I got really anxious hearing that. Like I'm anxious right now. I fucking hate that I can only do Instagram on my phone. If I had my choice, I would never fucking type on my phone ever. I hate texting. I hate typing. I hate it. I'll like, if they answer my DMs, I'll go on like my Meta, like stupid, like combo and respond to DMs on my computer.
No, she does everything on her phone, and she
so
did.
Impressive.
She helped with the rap a little bit. Beatrix Hollow actually helped us with the rap. And Ava Priest, who is running three of the anthologies that I'm in over the next year, she did all the formatting as my friend, and I will be eternally grateful to her for that. It wouldn't be a book if it wasn't for her. So between Ava and Beatrix, we managed to get the paperback out into the world, which, and hilariously, I still don't own a fucking copy of that. I still haven't ordered my own copy.
You have to order it. You need to get that baby up on a shelf.
I have my Into the Woods, the first anthology, well, actually the second anthology I was in. And then I have my Monstrous Desires anthology, the charity anthology. This is the first physical book I was ever in, the Monstrous Desires anthology. So.
It makes sense that you've known it then.
So eventually I'll get my Oster, because we actually have signature plates for what do they call them, for to sell signed copies. We just
oh my god, they're so cute.
Welcome to Star Pass ID tags, like the gas station. So we're going to be selling signed copies of Oster as soon as I order my author copies. So yeah, So Oster is my favorite book, because it's just, we fit so much in there, and it was a beautiful world. We are going back to Oster. We are doing Oster 2. It's going to be called Tales from the Scrum. And we're still working out we're going to be touching on the tentacle brothel, just a whole bunch of the mushroom farm.
For those who don't know, Planet Oster is about, I describe it as, like Vera was and her co-author were basically like, what would happen if Easter peeps were sentient? And also laid eggs, and also were like Omegaverse, and also were hot. Like she took bunnies and made them like aliens, and then made them lay eggs, and then made them hot.
Yeah, we kept adding more and more and more weird, like, you know, prefixes to the plot. It's a reverse harem, an MMMF, aliens, Easter bunny aliens in space, and there's ovipositing. and it's like a pregnancy for hire plot. And we've got a really rowdy FMC who doesn't fit the usual designation. She's like just a total fucking garbage fire of a person, and we love her. She thinks she can fix her ship. She can't. She's just constantly blowing stuff. She's great. She's fantastic. She's blowing stuff up. She's messing up her ship. And so we're going to revisit that world because we made the Scrum and we love the Scrum so much. We talk about the Scrum all the time, like it was a place we vacationed. And we're going to start writing more in that universe because we loved it so much.
I love that. I love when authors are just like, ah, we're not done. We put so much work into this world and we're going to explore it more. I love that. Okay, well, thank you, Vera, for coming on the Romantically Inclined podcast and shooting the shit with me about, literally, I don't think we've left a stone unturned at this point. I also want to just let everyone know that Vera is the one who introduced me to the Potato Shifter romance. So if you've been following me for any length of time, the Potato Shifter romance has given me a lot of fodder for reels, and I love it. And so the book is actually called All He Wants for Christmas is a Fingerling by J.P. Sayle, S-A-Y-L-E. And Michaela and I next episode are going to be reviewing, like I mentioned, Muscles and Monsters by Ashley Bennett. But next month, we are going to be talking about All He Wants for Christmas is a Fingerling. So it's on KU. If you are interested in knowing what we're talking about, you can give it a read. It's absolutely ridiculous how well written this book is for literally being about a potato that shifts into a human. Trigger warning, this book does have, is it cannibalism if he's a potato?
I mean, he doesn't die.
He turns into a potato and the other hero eats a portion of the potato. It's a requirement. The fingerling demands it as part of them being mates. It's not like it's consensual.
Eating. Yeah. Consensual.
Like, is it like boar? I don't know what it is. He's fine though. He's fine. But yeah. So if you want to follow along with that, you can read that for next episode, and I will let Vera go. Cause I told this episode was going to be 30 minutes long and it is not 30 minutes long. So if you're interested, you can follow her on Instagram and Facebook, and I recommend it because I learned so much from her feed and I adore her books and I talk about them all the time. So if you want to be privy to inside knowledge on my reels and my fucking memes and shit, then I recommend you give her a follow. So thank you, Vera, for joining us.
Anytime. Thank you for having me.
All right. And everybody just read whatever the fuck you want and write whatever the fuck you want.
Mm-hmm.
The end.